Blog Talk Radio.
Ooh. Yeah, yeah. You already know what time it is. It's that official time. When we take this worldwide. Let's go. Listen, listen. So now it's time to turn it up. Surf the radio waves as we begin to burn it up. We all up in your area like landscape, definitely bringing you the power slamming pancakes. It's the mandate that you tune in. It's time to move out so we can move in and recognize that this is no illusion. I'm here to clear the air so that there is no confusion. It all started off in the book of Genesis when Jacob was wrestling with who he thought was his nemesis. And when the man saw he couldn't overpower him, he touched his hip but he really could have devoured him. And from that point then we hear a name change, rearrange the game, so now we gotta change. So I'm here to let you know it's time to listen to the Pancake and Power Slam Show. Let's go!
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam.
Turn it up, turn it up.
It's the Pancake and Power Slam Show.
Turn it up.
You are now listening to the Pancakes and Power Slam Show by Crave Wrestling on Blog Talk Radio. Be sure to follow Crave Wrestling on Twitter at Crave Wrestling and join the Facebook fan page Crave Wrestling.
Episode 247, ladies and gentlemen, 247th episode of the Pancakes and Power Slam Show. I am Chris Featherstone, as always. Follow us at Crave Wrestling on Twitter and Facebook at Crave Wrestling. I am really, really, really excited about tonight's guest. This person, I started knowing about when I started watching ECW, and then I went a little bit further back and just saw some of the territorial promotions that he wrestled. But it was something about this person that was just a very eccentric character back in ECW. And then after that, just many variations and incarnations later, I am on the show right now with none other than Mr. Head himself, Al Snow. How are you tonight, sir?
I am fantastic. If I were any better, I would be jealous of myself.
No, nice. I think I would agree with that as far as how I'm doing as well. So I think we're two peas in a pod there.
Good for you, man. That's just, you know, it's good. You get to the point, man, what Chris, where you just walk by the mirror and you look at yourself and you go, oh, man, you're lucky. You know, you're lucky to just be you.
Yeah. I agree with that, man. As a PhD student, a successful journalist, and more than that, a very happy husband and father. So I agree with you. Yeah.
Well, I love being a porn star, so, you know, wrestling, so.
That's your side job, yeah. Yeah, breaking news, by the way.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
So breaking, I didn't even know myself.
Exactly, right. So it took you about a dozen years to get your first break, right?
About quote unquote a break, meaning that I, you know, really started to get noticed. Mm-hmm. By the average or the general fan. Yeah, I mean, it took about, I'd say a good 12 to 14 years. Mm-hmm. and that's pretty normal. I mean, when I first had broken into professional wrestling, they had said, you know, kid, you're probably not going to make any real money until you're in your 30s, which I broke in when I was 18. So, you know, it's a matter of experience and finding your own voice, developing that character that resonates with an audience.
So within those 12 years, what is just something that you remember that was just like the pits as far as like a gimmick throughout that time wrestling. Before, you know, of course, I think you made a really good point. By quote-unquote break, we're thinking 95 ECW, which you started in the early 80s. So during that time, you know, what is just, you know, what you learned the most, and you said something really good about as far as, you know, making money when you're 30. But what are some, you know, who are some wrestlers that kind of gave you some advice along the way, and what is just a gimmick that you were like, oh, I wish I'd never did that?
Well, you know, tons. I mean, it's, you know, the worst gimmick was the gimmick of just being a wrestler, just being a nondescript, you know, guy in a pair of trunks or tights that went out there and just wrestled. That was probably the worst gimmick I ever had. Probably the most challenging and the most difficult was when I first went into WWF and, you know, did the Avatar gimmick, which, you know, the success and failure of that was on my shoulders, but it was, you know, that's a tough road to hoe, going out there, you know, carrying a mask, putting it on to wrestle, even though everybody already knows your identity, and then wrestling, and then taking surprise, you take the mask off, and you're still the same person that came out to the ring. So, you know, it's like, you know, it takes a different approach and than what, you know, you're used to. And that was a tough spot. That was a real tough spot, you know, but, you know, the number one rule is to take crap and make chenoa. There's no such word as can't. You've got to always be able to take an opportunity and make the most of it. And, you know, I didn't at that time. So,
yeah, I think that's a good point. Well, one thing I did notice, and something that the WWE made sure to bill you from, and ECW as well, Lima, Ohio. That was something that always kept me close to Al Snow, both literally and metaphorically, I guess you can say, because I am an Ohioan as well. So, that's something that's really got excited about as far as just – as a teenager, he's from Ohio. So that's really cool. I was a teenager, I was in high school when you debuted in ECW. So yeah, that was something that I stayed close to. So does that make you, I mean, as far as sports, I mean, Ohio State, Cleveland, I mean, where are you at as far as sports?
As far as sports, gosh, you know, that's a loaded question from where I live. Cause I grew up in Lima, which is up in the northwest corner. So, you know, we had fans that were fans of the Detroit Tigers or the Detroit Lions. We had fans that were of the Chicago Cubs, the Sox, or the Bears, or, you know, we had fans that were in hockey, you know, the Blackhawks or the Detroit Red Wings, you know, Cincinnati Reds, Cincinnati Bengals, Cleveland Indians, Cleveland Browns, you know, so we kind of lived in a place that we kind of got everything.
Yeah.
And, you know, but Ohio, you know, it didn't matter where you were from in Ohio, it's Ohio State. You know,
All the way. Absolutely.
But I'd have to say, you know, cause I grew up in the time of the Big Red Machine. So I'd have to say Cincinnati Reds,
there you go.
Baseball. And then, I'd have to say, I'd have to say the Cleveland Browns for football.
Ooh, I'm sure that's tough to say.
Yeah, it's a tough one.
Well, at least you said Ohio State. I am a fellow avid Ohio State fan. We got a tough task coming on New Year's Eve against Clemson, and hopefully we can win 2 out of 3 college football playoffs.
Yeah, that'd be awesome.
Yeah,
I think so. I'm confident.
Yeah,
you know, Ohio State's got an amazing program. You know, and my money's on Ohio State.
I agree with you totally. So let's talk about your ECW days real quick. You were there for about a couple years, right?
No, I was actually there for about a year.
Mm-hmm. And, well, you had two stints, right?
I had two stints. I went in prior to going to Smoky Mountain, you know, just as Al Snow, and then went to Smoky Mountain Wrestling, which was ran by Jim Cornette, and the plan was I was going to work both Tiff Horns, but Paul, you know, I think kind of wanted just people that were loyal to ECW, and at that time, and not going, you know, dividing their commitments. So that kind of ran its course, and I was with, you know, Smoky Mountain 100%. And then that, you know, developed into an opportunity. Both, you know, I had went from being like known as the best kept secret in wrestling to, you know, getting an opportunity with WCW to be looked at and talked to, and then the very next week, you know, being flown to Connecticut and, you know, having a 2-hour meeting with Vince McMahon and signing with WWF, and, you know, it was incredible. And then I went back to ECW because I knew at that time that if I stayed where I was in WWE, I was never going to go any further. It was, you know, I was kind of had ran my course in the spot that I was in. I was going to be stuck there in that spot. It was not going to, I had to go someplace else, and I had to, in wrestling terms, you know, get myself over, get, you know, make myself a marketable personality. And got lucky, and, you know, because of timing and relationship with Chris Candido, and who went and appealed to Paul Heyman, who appealed to Vince McMahon, and they, you know, I was still under contract to WWF at the time, and they basically put me on the road to ECW, which, you know, there was no plans or no, you know, nothing like that. But, you know, I went there with the sole intentions of doing everything I could to try to get myself over, try to create my voice, a character, you know, to the point of where, you know, either Paul would pay to keep me, or WCW would pay to take me away, or WWE would pay to get me back.
Yeah.
You know, and through the grace of God and the plastic head, you know, it worked.
So. Absolutely. Yeah, and it's interesting because you said that you went back to ECW to get yourself over. You know, essentially, if you didn't do that, you know, the head gimmick wouldn't have been birthed. And, you know, it was very much of a good idea. And it was a gamble, of course, because WWE, ECW, it was a juggernaut versus an upstart as far as the ECW Extreme brand is concerned. So, you know, kudos to you for making that jump and end up giving you a better opportunity with the WWE as far as the Hardcore Championship run is concerned.
Yeah, you know, I got the opportunity with the World Tag Team titles, the Hardcore title, the European title. I had, you know, the run with Tough Enough, you know, the commentary position.
Yep.
With Sunday Night Heat, and, you know, I had a, you know, an absolutely wonderful career in, you know, WWE, and, you know, in professional wrestling in general. I've, you know, there are those that have done more, and, you know, but I've done much more than many, and I've lasted longer than, you know, a great amount. So, you know, I'm very, very blessed and very happy that I've gotten to be able to do what I love to do for as long as I've been able to do it.
Yeah, let's talk about the European Championship for a little bit. Now, I really wanted to ask you this, and I was really excited because, you know, we've had you scheduled on the show for a little bit now, but after I had you scheduled on the show, the information broke from the WWE that they're debuting a new United Kingdom Championship, and so as soon as I thought about that, I said, oh, yes, that's a fantastic conversation point to talk to Al about, because he was the European champion. But, you know, he, you know, I remember in your stint that you were saying that you were billed from different places and, you know, that
representing different countries in Europe.
Exactly,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah, because I'm a true European champion.
Right.
You just have, you're going to represent all of Europe. Not
that's
just,
right.
You know, one or two.
That's so. Exactly right. Yeah. And so what are your thoughts on that? Because there's, you know, the UK championship is seemingly from, you know, all the things that I've reported and wrote about, it's going to be exclusive to some, you know, some countries in the UK. And yeah. And they want it to be a jump off of the brands that they're already making, like NXT and the Cruiserweights. And eventually have its own show. Now,
sure.
what are your thoughts on that? As far as, you know, it being seemingly concentrated to the UK audience, who were, you know, who watched the WWE based on American talent, but when the European Championship, which basically is the same thing, was in the WWE, it didn't go too well. It started to just kind of fade away because it was a secondary championship. And they really didn't have any European stars, you know, to win the European Championship, minus like a Regal or a Bulldog. Other than that, it just wasn't a lot of European championships. So what are your thoughts on the UK Championship?
I think it's fantastic. There's amazing, you know, talent in the UK, and there's amazing – it's an amazing wrestling scene over there. I have a, you know, a wrestling academy in London that I operate, and, you know – just the wealth of talent that's not been explored over there is the depth and so on is it's a great opportunity for them, you know, to showcase themselves on a bigger platform with the network. You know, it's brilliant marketing on WWE's part to now they can, you know, give content that can help drive that, you know, UK market and hence the European market. You know, exposure for talent that eventually they could possibly bring up to the main roster. I mean, there's nothing but positives for that. So,
what would be advice for it not to go the direction of the European Championship?
Well, you know, I think it's not going to. It's a different time. It's different, you know, different purpose behind the title.
Yeah.
I think it's a different, they have an additional platform for it, you know, and so I think that the European title, there was, you know, the intentions were correct there. It just wasn't, they just didn't have everything that they do now with this, with the UK title.
That's
that they
true.
They can really capitalize on.
Yeah. Yeah, I think that's a good point. Especially the talent is concerned. They have a plethora of talent in UK, as you mentioned.
And in Europe, too. I mean, in Germany is really doing great right now.
Yep.
As far as, you know, wrestling is concerned, the independent wrestling there, Scotland, you know, England, Wales, I mean, they're doing really well. World of Sport, they've just, you know, revitalized and have tried a, you know, another shot at creating the old World of Sport wrestling television program there in England, you know. So, you know, I think that it's a really it's a great time to create the title and to like I said, give an opportunity to a lot of talent that otherwise would not be getting seen, and then create it's a platform that helps to market for an audience, and that you know, we can drive business with that title.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I think you brought some good points there. Speaking of the UK, TNA, you've spent the better part of this decade in TNA. Basically TNA's they usually have a pretty packed house every time they would go to the UK. So what is it about TNA that has such a magnetic UK appeal?
Well, they had a very strong television presence for many years, and that's really key in wrestling, you know. You know, a lot of people don't understand what a wrestling television program is. It's not a television program. Wrestling television program is basically an infomercial, to sell your product, and your product are your wrestlers. And, you know, that's the sole purpose for it. And, with a strong television presence like that in the UK, and not really a lot of direct competition from WWE at that time, without the network and without a strong television access like TNA had, it allowed for them to flourish in the UK.
Yeah, that's a good point. So what are your overall thoughts of the gut check challenge that you participated in as a judge?
I thought it was great. It genuinely was an avenue to give people who had been wrestling for years an opportunity on a national stage or an international stage to get noticed. And, as with all wrestling, it was supposed to be like a work, like we would know going out there, I don't think we're going to hire this person or whatever, but they have a great story and we're going to, let them go on TV and tell it. But it turned out that it became genuinely an opportunity for people. And a lot of people got hired and got runs because of being involved in gut check.
Yeah.
Joey Ryan's a fine example. Made his own opportunity.
Absolutely.
Did an amazing job.
Yeah. Sam Shaw as well.
Mm-hmm.
And Wes Briscoe with the Aces and Eights. So,
mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Alex Silva wasn't very, he didn't have a lot of high remarks on it as far as him being a successful contestant, but him not getting an opportunity to actually compete for the company. What are your thoughts on that?
Alex is a good kid, but the key word would be kid. Alex was very immature, and he got an opportunity at the wrong time. He was very talented, very charismatic, had great potential. The problem was he just didn't have the maturity level to handle it properly and to be able to take advantage of it. It's unfortunate.
Yeah. Yeah, it is. And now you're doing a few things. You came back with having an angle with Shira, and then you brought in the Tribunal, and then recently the Tribunal did away with the coaching of Al Snow, and then you teamed up with Shira. Yeah, exactly. I have no clue. Someone who's been in the business for nearly 35 years, it just doesn't make any sense to me.
I don't know what they're drinking.
But you formed an alliance with Shira, and the same person who you would whip like a like a no good no good worker. We'll just say that. And what was it about Shira that you saw you wanted to work with?
The one most important aspect of trying to pursue something like professional wrestling or anything else is that you have to have a passion for it,
mm-hmm.
a real, true passion. I've seen tons of guys over 35 years that have all the talent, size, charisma, skill, looks, and they fail miserably because they don't have the passion to do it.
Yeah.
And, Shira, is from India. He's from, Bangladesh. So he's left his home, his family, his country, didn't know how to speak English, traveled to Nashville, Tennessee, and all for the dream of being a professional wrestler. That's impressive.
Yeah.
And now leaves America, travels to England, and has been training at the academy that I run for the last several months. To gain more experience and a better understanding, all because he wants it so badly, So he goes from, one foreign country to another foreign country, you know, and the whole time, you know, trying to understand culture and languages and changes and everything else, and, you know, all in the pursuit of trying to be a professional wrestler and living this dream.
Yeah. Well, you made it sound really good to partner up with them, and I think you brought in some really good points. Real quick before we plug your academy here, so there's, you know, I don't want to get too much into the legal stuff, because that's, you know, whatever's public is public, but. As far as Anthem is concerned, what are some expectations you have from the new acquisition from TNA, you know, from them, and, you know, what are some objectives for 2017?
Well, expectations, I would expect and hope that they would be wholeheartedly invested, not just financially, but, you know, and motivated to try to grow the company.
Yeah.
And you know, do everything they can to, you know, a lot of people don't realize, and I say this not just because I'm with the company, because I could care less about that. I mean, if anybody listens to any areas I'm done, it's not like I'm afraid to speak my mind. I've always been so impressed about the fact that with TNA that, you know, they have basically a third of the budget, production-wise, a third of the talent budget, a third of the, you know, talent roster, a third of the production staff, a third of the actual, you know, managerial staff, not even a third, or less than an eighth. You know, I can go on down the list, and everybody works so hard to produce a show that, granted, it's not nearly, you know, at the level of WWE, but it's not far off, and is competitive in a lot of ways. And that is a testament to everyone's passion and effort that everyone had constantly puts in at that company, you know. And, you know, the hope is that with additional resources, they can now, you know, help to carry things even a step above and, you know, do even more. And with that work ethic, with additional resources, it should help to really help us succeed and grow.
What do you say to the people, including myself at times, that, you know, say, you know, TNA has 9 lives and, you know, they just,
well, it does.
Yeah, and it just seems like it just seems like it just keeps, you know, scraping and scraping. Yeah. What do you think?
Mm-hmm. Well, I not because I work for the company, but thank God it does. I mean, what are we going to, you know, we're going to have just a singular market of WWE and nothing else, no alternative, no options, no nothing. I mean, who benefits for that?
Yeah,
I mean, you know,
that's true.
The wrestlers themselves don't benefit. WWE itself doesn't benefit. The fans certainly don't benefit, you know, because it you lose all of the possibilities and the creativity and the magic that could possibly, you know, happen. Places like TNA and more, if we could get more to exist again, that could, you know, that could just help wrestling as a whole, as opposed to just, oh, well, we just have WWE. And
yeah.
That's it.
Yeah.
Well, okay. You know, it's human nature that WWE is going to, at some point, if it's just them, they're not going to push as hard. They're not going to create as much. They're not going to be as driven. You know, it's just the competition's not there. And to any degree, not that TNA is that much of a competitor, but, you know, at least it keeps them somewhat going, you know.
I've said this so many times on my show, you know, you were on the WWE side of the Monday Night Wars throughout the heart of it. And, you know, it just seems like the weekly conquest to supremacy was there for the WWE every single week. It was during the Monday Night Wars, as far as the competitive, when they saw that the WCW was about competition, yeah. You know, it was, hey, let's kind of regroup here and redirect some things.
Wrap it up.
Yeah. I personally don't believe that we see that with the WWE. I'm very critical of the WWE a lot of times. And I think you made a good point as far as just if there's nothing, at least with TNA, there's something. I've been very critical of TNA as well. I've just like you, I also speak my mind in a PG way. But at the same time, I one thing, if I could be an apologist for TNA, I can't say that without TNA, it makes a highly criticized WWE creative presentation even more critical, to be honest with you. So kudos to you.
Here's the thing. One, you don't have to apologize for TNA. Nobody does. Two, TNA does its own thing and it creates its own success and its own failures. Three, WWE, everybody talks about WWE creative and all of this. Everybody needs to stop that right now. It is not WWE creative's business. It is not TNA's creative business. It is no one's business but the wrestler's business. It is 100% the people in the ring who perform their responsibility.
So the talent's not
stepping
up.
That's their job. Well, I'm not saying they're not, because I haven't watched.
Okay.
So I can't evaluate. Gotcha. I'm simply telling you and anyone who listens that when you all sit around and go, oh, creative this and creative that, it's not the writer's business. It has been and always will be a talent-driven business. What is created in that ring is created by the talent. It lives and it dies by the talent, period. There are no ifs, ands, or buts, and people can debate as much as they want about it, but at the end of the day, that's the truth. It is the wrestler's business, and it's the wrestler's responsibility. Now, creative gives direction, gives ideas, gives a canvas, and gives a, hey, I want this picture painted. And now it's up to the talent to paint the picture. And it's no different than when a director tells an actor, hey, I want you to be this character. It's up to the actor to create the character.
Mm-hmm.
And it's up to the wrestler to tell that story, perform in a manner that motivates an audience, their emotions to get to rise so high that they are now driven to watch that talent on a regular basis, regardless of what those emotions are.
Now, let me ask you this. I think you, because you've been on the creative side, so I'm listening to you. I'm soaking in what you have because of your experience as a wrestler and as someone from the creative staff. To kind of poke at what you just said real quick before we close. You had things like Leaf Cassidy and Avatar and Shinobi that weren't necessarily your first pick. So in those cases, you know, with situations that necessarily weren't in your favor, how do you rise above that?
You have to take it and make it your own. There is no, I wish that I could verbalize it, but it's not something that you can verbalize. It's, you know, you're given a platform and they don't give you, just so you understand, don't stand there and they go, okay, you're going to go out there and you're going to do, you know, at least they didn't used to. I don't know so much anymore, but I know, you know, when I produce a match, I don't stand there and go, well, you're going to go out there and you're going to do this, 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 this. I go, I would suggest, you know, here's what we're trying to accomplish. Here's what we want people to think, feel, and believe. Here's the best, I think, based on my experience. It's your match, though. It's your responsibility. So, but I would, you know, you guys go and put it together when you come back, you know, I'll help you to either add stuff or take things away or not do something at a certain point to do it later or do it earlier so that you can do what we're trying to achieve.
Yeah.
And that's a skill unto itself. And that's up to the wrestler, totally 100% up to the wrestler to go out and be able to do that. And they do not. They don't sit there and hold you by the hand. They do more so now, these days, but back in the day, they did not hold you by the hand and go, okay, and here's exactly what we want you to do and when we want you to do it. And here's, they don't, because it just, it's a living, breathing thing that happens in the moment. If it does, if it doesn't happen like that, then that's what leads to the criticism by the audience. It'd be, well, you know, it just didn't work, you know, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Because creative, just so you understand, because, you know, you're right, I've been on the creative side. But when I was on the creative side, I could only do what the wrestler gave me. You know, they'd go out in the ring and they'd do something, and I would go, oh, man, I could, if, you know, he's this person, I could tell this story. But if he just goes out and he's just another guy in a pair of trunks and a pair of tights, it never made me go, oh, if I had him do this with this guy, I could tell this story.
Right.
We could build to this thing and we could then do this. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
That never happened. But when guys go out and they create, they do things, it makes you, whether they win or lose, which doesn't matter. Oh, my God, it's so painful. You could sew my head to the floor and it would not hurt as much as to listen to people go, oh, you know, that guy's losing their job. Now, for one, people don't even know what a jobber is anymore, and we haven't had it in probably 25 years. You know, they don't exist. And so how you can do that, you know, losing is not doing the job. That's called doing the favor. And the reason it's called doing a favor is because when the time's right, the favor was returned. And, you know, but winning and losing honestly don't mean nothing. They don't mean anything. You can win every match and you still, you know, we put a magnet up your rear end and drag you through Fort Knox naked and you wouldn't draw a dime. And
yeah.
I've seen guys that lose every match, you know, and, you know, I use the example all the time. Tommy Dreamer was a major star in ECW, and he lost every single match.
Yeah, he lost all the time, yeah.
Not all the time. He lost every single match. So according to the evaluation...
Well, he had some retribution against Raven, right? He went like 2 years without winning, and he finally won that one match.
That's all he won.
Yeah.
So he was a jobber. He got jobbed out.
Yeah, yeah. Great stuff, Al. Let us know where we can find you other than TNA, social media, and plug your academy.
Okay. You can find me at The Real Al Snow. Yes, there were fakes. I usually would write them and tell them that they wanted to fake being a celebrity, aim higher. But, you know, whatever. The Real Al Snow on Facebook, The Real Al Snow on Instagram, The Real Al Snow on Twitter, and Al Snow's Wrestling Academy. We're on Facebook and on Twitter as Al Snow's Academy, and then AlSnowAcademy.uk, or no, AlSnowsAcademyUK.com on our website.
Awesome.
So
AlSnowsAcademyUK.com.
Yes.
Awesome. And, of course, at The Real Al Snow on Twitter. Follow the man, or he will follow you.
I will stalk you.
Awesome.
Hunt you down and stand outside your house and stare in your window.
Yeah, so you will have a white mannequin head with you.
Yeah, we'll just hang out, you know, and because it is the season to be jolly.
That's that's absolutely right. So if you just put mannequin heads in people's porches, I think it'll just fit right with the season.
I think so. I mean, Halloween, we do it with, you know, jack-o'-lanterns. Why not for Christmas do it with
there you go.
Mannequin heads?
Perfect. So. It's been a pleasure, Al. Thanks for your time, man.
Thank you very much, Chris.
All right, bye-bye.
Bye.
Episode 247. Thank you so much, Al Snow, the legendary Al Snow, former WWE European Hardcore Tag Team Champion and TNA. He's been involved with TNA for, about 7 years now, the entire 2010 decade with the Gut Check Challenge and the ECW revision type feud with EC3 and just a bunch of different hands that he's had in TNA for the past half dozen years. So Al Snow, man, such a legendary wrestler, one of a very good wrestler. This guy's been, you know, I was digging, of course, before I do interviews, I do a lot of digging, and he's been open. He has his own wrestling school now, the Academy, in the UK. But the funny thing is that I saw that he opened operated a wrestling school back in 95. So that's very, very crazy. All right, ladies and gentlemen, so let's get started on the show. We got a lot to talk about. And without further ado, one of my favorite co-hosts in the entire world, former feature columnist for the Bleacher Report WWE, he is the writer extraordinaire. And if you don't think he can write, go read his stuff and be dreadfully wrong. So without further ado, Mr. Travis Taylor, how are you tonight, sir?
Oh, I'm doing great, man. Thanks so much for having me back on. What an introduction. Thank you so much. And what an incredible interview with Al Snow. That was awesome.
Man, I appreciate it, man. It's just, yeah. You know, as you know, I have a formatted show every time. And every week when I have interviews, I aim to have it at a certain amount of time, but sometimes, you know, when I talk to some of those legendary figures, I just let it go in an overtime. And,
oh yeah, absolutely.
Cause, yeah, because there's so much to talk about, man. I remember my goal with Pritchard was about 20-25 minutes, and we went about 45 minutes because there was so much to talk about with Pritchard, because he has such a storied history as well. So it's just like that. So. All right, ladies and gentlemen, without further ado, let's get to the headlines. Here we go. Paige Van Zandt, UFC's yeah. Paige Van Zandt. She is teasing a WWE career down the line. Now, she's, you know, still with the UFC stuff right now, and she doesn't plan on anything different in the foreseeable future, but she did say on Fox Sports a few months back that she's willing, even now, she said that she's willing to work with the WWE if he fits in her schedule. And then, you know, she had that loss last weekend at Fight Night. You know, she has 10 fights under her belt. She's 7-3. She's only 22 years old. So I'm sure, you know, if she wants to have a little less physicality and probably the same or even more money, WWE might be the path for her.
Yeah, absolutely. I think Paige Van Zandt would be a great fit in the WWE. She's got three things going for her. Like you said, she's young. I think she's 22. She has the look that WWE really likes, and she's very athletic. Yeah. And really all that remains to be seen is if she can come into the WWE and create a compelling enough character to get over the crowd. And it's not whether or not she can wrestle, I don't think is really relevant at this point with her. Character and name recognition would be enough. Mm-hmm. I think she'd be a perfect fit.
Yeah, I was thinking about, where could she fit? I think she would be the best bodyguard for Alexa Bliss.
Oh, yes.
Yeah.
That, I wish I had thought of that. That is perfect.
Yeah.
Oh, my God,
she's
yes.
small and petite like Alexa is. She's a strawweight, and she's young like Alexa is. And they have a similar build. And it just seems like that's a perfect fit for her.
Absolutely. And that could certainly be a stepping point or a stepping stone for her to just transition to a full-time ring career, just like Chyna did back in the day,
yep.
starting off as
exactly.
Triple H's bodyguard.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Because, because it's easy. I mean, it's usually – those type of roles is really easy to transition out of because mm-hmm. It only takes that one time, you know, where the person you're bodyguarding gets a little bit too aggressive, you know, towards you and you snap on her and then, you know, everyone cheers and there you go.
Yeah. Makes me think all the way back to Virgil and Million Dollar Man, yeah. Ted DiBiase.
Oh, man. Yeah, that wasn't a very successful one. I think Kevin Nash was a successful one, but not
yes.
Virgil was not good. He came out with candy cane trunks on. that was a little much there. Yeah, it was. He won the million-dollar title. That was the best he had, and just a job out of
at least
that.
It was something, you know.
Yeah.
Well, hey, Steve Austin was million-dollar champion too.
Yeah, but he became world champion though. Goldust was million-dollar champion too. At least he had Intercontinental champion, tag team champion, hardcore champion. Virgil, on the other hand, that's his best thing. And nowadays, you know, there's all types of pictures of him being alone during his autograph signing. So.
Oh, I know. That makes me sad. It really does.
Yeah, it does. At least he had an opportunity to, you know, be on the Edge and Christian show on the network.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, so I found this next bit pretty fascinating here. So there was a tweet that came out last week that showed a house show script of a live event that happened last weekend, actually, and it was just. It was just so hilarious to me that, you know, Vince McMahon laid out the template for the live event. And there was just so much on there that was just absolutely hilarious. And there was some that was in bold print and red print. You know, it says producer agent, no low blows. Also, any use of chairs, tables, or other objects must be approved first. Also, agents need to approve heels taking a walk during their matches and limit to the top matches. And there were some things going on as far as like John Cena having an only being the only exception to something. It was something that was on there about that. And I'm like, what is this? So I found that so fascinating.
I found that amusing. I saw that tweet, and I think there's something on there about no pile drivers and something about the referee taking a bump. My first thought, okay, when I saw this, I found it very funny, and I wasn't sure how real the document is. You know, I just – part of me finds it hard to believe that something like that would just be left lying around.
Mm-hmm.
But, okay, assuming it is and it's real, I don't find it that surprising. Vince McMahon is well known for having his finger in everything, just like micromanaging everything.
Very true.
I think it would show, if it's true, I think it shows a commitment to, I think the WWE's part shows a commitment to consistency between like house shows and TV shows.
Mm-hmm.
I like to look at it as like if there was like you go to see a touring production of a Broadway show, you'd expect the two shows, the Broadway show and the touring production, to be the same in terms of content and tone. The thrill comes from seeing it live, and the WWE is no different. You know, I wouldn't want to take my kids to a house show and find it, you know, three times as violent as what I'm used to seeing on TV.
Yeah, I think that's a good point. I'm just fascinated at what's on the sheet. You know, I mean, the consistency is fine, but it says, here's a part. It says no impromptu talent promos. Promos must be approved ahead of time by Michael Hayes or by the, I think it says IE agent, producer, and talent must something about run the content through an agent, producer, and then they must approve. And this is true because I interviewed Brad Maddox. And he basically said that there's producers, and then at the end of the day, it still has to run, you know, through McMahon, but you lose so much of your voice, you know, nowadays with the WWE, you know, and that's, you know, Al Snow, you know, he's a legend in the business. I was soaking in what he was saying, but there's a couple of things that I want to poke at. And one thing, for the second time, I poked at one of them, just with the, you know, nature. It's really hard nowadays for a talent to really hone its own, you know, when he or she is out in the ring, because they're so bridled, they're so scripted, and if they deviate from that, it seemed like that would be a good idea, but you might get ringed for it.
Right, and who's going to take that chance? I understand what you're saying. It kind of stifles creativity. You know, some of the best stuff is the stuff you make up on the fly when you're in the moment. And,
yeah,
you're absolutely right. I don't like the micromanaging. I think it's a part of what the WWE is now with just the big money machine. But I don't know. We'll see what happens. Maybe someday down the line, maybe when if Triple H and Stephanie eventually take over, maybe we'll get a little more spontaneity in the wrestlers.
That's true. And I think we see that with NXT.
Absolutely.
It doesn't seem like – it seems like NXT is more of a – we'll give you a couple bullet points, but, you know, kind of hone your own as opposed to, as Brad Maddox was saying, and as Bret Hart has said this before too, you have to and Bret Hart was not used to this when he was around, but nowadays they basically give him a script to memorize a few hours before, and Maddox said the same thing. You get a script a few hours before, and basically you have to memorize it. And you can see that's why Foley flubs all the time.
Yeah, absolutely.
And
Stephanie
has to feed him his line.
Yeah, I mean, it's got to be tough. I mean, especially if you have pages and pages of dialogue. I mean, even actors have some time to rehearse and prepare. They don't give in a script, you know, 2-3 hours beforehand and say go.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. That's, I mean, like I said, that's the reason why Stephanie has to feed him his lines, sadly, you know, and he just, if he, you know, I was, we'll talk about Raw in a minute, but yeah, he even forgot what city he was in. But yeah, that was sad. Zack Ryder out 4 to 9 months, man. This is the most inopportune time for something like this to happen. You know, just the hype bros finally kind of, getting some traction and kind of ascending a bit, getting some steam behind them to go forward and go and onward and upward. I've always liked the hype bros. I think it was, you know, for the sentimental value for me, honestly, because both Mojo Rawley and Zack Ryder was at the point of just really kind of, you know, grasping for anything at the point. And just putting them together in NXT was a really, really, it was a hidden gem. And it worked enough for them to go on SmackDown and, you know, still get some support from the crowd. And it really helped Mojo, because there was a lot of times when he was in NXT alone, he would get booed. And with the hype bros, you know, he was with Zack Ryder, who's a consistent babyface. And so they finally got an opportunity to, you know, be number one contenders. And just, it's crazy. I mean, he tore his patella, you know, had surgery. I posted the pic on the Crave Wrestling Facebook page, and he's out 4 to 9 months in this time, and it's sad because he's missing Mania.
Yeah, I agree with you. I think this is bad news for Ryder, because you know, being off TV can be like a death knell for a character.
Yeah.
Ryder, I mean, he's struggled for a while. I mean, he was big for a while, and he struggled for a long time to get back on TV in kind of a more prominent role. It's like the WWE just didn't want to, you know, take a chance on him. And he finally was on to something with WrestleMania, winning the Intercontinental title, even though he did lose it the next day. It doesn't matter. He got that Mania win. And like as you mentioned, the Hype Bros were just catching a fire, number one contenders. I think what interest and, like, storylines WWE had for him, they're going to be gone when he comes back. I mean, 9 months at the bad end, 9 months, that's a long time to be away.
Yeah.
He's going to have to start back over at square one. I think it's going to be quite some time before he's back to where he was, if he ever gets there.
I think that's a fantastic point, because he's not at that main event level where, you know, his spot has a better chance of being there. I've interviewed many people on the show that basically said the same thing. I mean, if you lose your spot, if you get injured, that's the reason why a lot of people don't even you know, that they don't even report their injuries. That's why a lot of people didn't want to, you know, a lot of wrestlers that I've talked to was even scared to report concussions, you know, because they didn't want to lose that spot. Because if you lose that spot, you lose so much amount of money, you know what I mean? And that has to do with, you know, your family, your livelihood. And so it's a really tough business. It really is, because, you know, you wonder why people don't want to even report their injuries. But I can, you know, I can tell. I mean, that's how Cesaro was. You know, he was very silent about his injury, and it started getting worse and worse, and he had no other choice but to have surgery. He ended up missing a Mania, but he was really he was really tight lipped about it, because he didn't want to miss his spot.
Yeah, I don't blame him.
Yeah,
it's you know, it's a tough, like you said, it's a tough business, and when it's hard to get back there, unless you're one of the top guys, like you said, there's no guarantee that spot's gonna be waiting for you.
That's absolutely right. Yeah. Speaking of spots, so the WWE is interested in Matt Hardy. That's been, you know, news for a while. One of these days he'll have a premonition and he'll get signed by WWE. And my boy Eli Drake, he was interviewed. I interviewed him on my show about a year and a half ago. Kudos to all the that interview has been swarmed. Like I looked, it was everywhere. People were sending me articles everywhere of when they found out last week, about a week or within the past 2 weeks is when, you know, the articles have been transpired, has came up and been released and posted about Eli Drake coming to WWE, as far as them being interested. And all of them have used that transcript of the article from the Pancakes and Power Slam show. So that's kudos to Eli Drake for coming on the Pancakes and Power Slam show and all of the all of the websites that use that transcript. So that's awesome. But there's
that
one more person
awesome.
That I'm looking at. What's that?
I said that is seriously awesome.
It is, absolutely, especially a year and a half later. That's really cool. But yeah, there's one more person that's they're eyeing, according to a source, and that is Bobby Lashley, 40-year-old Bobby Lashley. They're interested in, you know, there's some reports that are saying that they're interested in bringing him back. I don't see Lashley in a major role in the WWE main roster, but I would absolutely love Bobby Lashley in NXT.
I think he would be fantastic in NXT. That's a great point. When you mentioned they were interested in hiring Bobby Lashley, I was just thinking, if WWE keeps hiring TNA talent, they're going to have a whole other brand. WWE TNA. I think Lashley would be a nice welcome back to the WWE, specifically, like you said, in NXT. He'd bring both, you know, he's got wrestling experience and some mainstream name recognition. Mm-hmm. And despite his age, he's still in, like, not that 40's old, but in wrestling terms it is, you know. And
right.
He's still in tremendous ring shape, and I feel like he can still carry a match. My first thought is his health, like, directly related to having a lighter schedule with TNA, and would being in the daily grind of the WWE, even with NXT, would that take a toll on him? And would he be able to keep up? Regardless, I'd love to see him back. I think he could put on some great matches and put over some of the talent in NXT. I mean, it's a constant turnover down in NXT. They always need some new names to come up through there, and he could really help push some guys straight up. And if WWE would also bring back Eli Drake, then everything would be great.
Nice.
I was watching him back when he was Sean Ricker in Championship Wrestling from Hollywood. Oh, he was Percy Pringle. I thought this guy needs to be
Percy Pringle. Yep, absolutely. Yeah, I remember seeing that. He, you know, let me talk to you. You know, that was still known at that time, but this was not.
Dummy. Yeah.
the dummy button is one of the best things going today.
My God, that makes me laugh.
I absolutely love it. I love it. I think, you know, and I have to look at, I have to listen to that interview, because I remember I was telling him that he should be. It was so long ago. I mean, I haven't listened to it in almost a year and a half, so I have to listen to that interview again. I remember saying something like, I was talking about mic work, and I was talking about how you know, he was over in Championship Wrestling from Hollywood, and just the whole "let me talk to you" and just his mic work is so infectious, and it's so good. I think I said something about Road Warrior Hawk and how I was a big fan of his mic work, because for someone who was such a dominating figure, you know, he was, you know, Animal would give him the best alley-oop in the world and say, "Tell him, Hawk." And then Hawk would like, "Well," you know, and he would say like a story from Chicago. Like, it would be so irrelevant to anything, but he would still kind of wrap it around. Like, "I was in Chicago and I was in the alley trying to get some exercise and someone bumped me. And the next time he woke up, he was in the hospital." You know, just something, you know, just something that was just so random.
But it sucked you right in.
Right. And Dusty Rhodes, that's going to be you. You know, it's just something, it's just so random. But like you said, it sucked me right in. And I said, you know, Eli Drake, I said, "You should do a promo like that." You know, I challenged him. And I listen to a lot of his promos. I haven't listened to all of them, of course, but I have to see if he does that, because that would be really, really interesting. But he's so gold on the mic, though.
Yeah, and I just think he's got the total package for WWE. I mean, he's got the look, he's got the talent, he's good on the mic. I really hope that someone wises up over there and brings him back in.
Yeah. The only thing I'm so critical about is that, you know, and again, it's one of those things of how creative, you know, Al Snow's real big, you know, he's real big on not voting, you know, not blaming creative for anything. But I would respectfully disagree on that, because you have people like AJ Styles, you know, when Seth Rollins was a heel, Kevin Owens, you know, those are people who are out there doing their job. But at the same time, like, they're not really getting booked as strong heels, you know, and like Kevin Owens. You know, I'm not too big on Kevin Owens, because, you know, I think he's a phenomenal athlete, but he's not a very good heel, because, you know, a heel should, if you're a good heel, people aren't going to cheer you. I mean, that's basically,
right.
I mean, or people are going to cheer you because you're such a good heel, like Chris Jericho. Like, he's such a good heel that people love to hate him, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. And with Owens, something's not clicking. It's just not there yet. And it's just, you know, I wouldn't put all that on Owens, though. I would put some of it on creative, because creative is the one that is putting him in the positions, you know, to really do his best. I mean, creative has something to do with the matchmaking. They have, you know, a lot of the spots are called and rehearsed and, you know, ran over by, you know, certain people. I mean, look at that list that we just talked about, you know, and the details that comes with that. You know, there's not a lot of wiggle room that any competitor can have nowadays, and it's just really hard for a heel to be a heel.
Yeah, I understand completely where you're coming from. The only thing I slightly disagree with, I like what Owens is doing with his character. He does this thing that I call it a cowardly heel, where he's beatable. He's a talented wrestler, but he comes across as very beatable, and the only way he can win is by cheating. And he's one of I love watching cowardly heels. I just find him really entertaining.
Like Flair and Piper.
Exactly. Yeah. Thank you. Mm-hmm. Exactly. I really enjoy that. And, you know, growing up, Ric Flair was my all-time favorite wrestler. And maybe that's why I enjoy that kind of heel persona so much. But I think I really enjoy watching Owens do that. I like seeing him scared and running around and barely keeping his title. It's entertaining to me.
I like that. I like it, too. Mm-hmm. Like you said, I like the Carol. I think heels like Flair, Piper, Owens, you know, people like that, they should be cowardly heels. They should be, but the whole point is they elicit, you know, boos. You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like,
yeah.
What's the disconnect with someone like a Piper and a Flair compared to someone, you know, like a Kevin Owens? You know, what's the disconnect that's causing people to cheer him? Is it because the in-ring work is so good? I mean, should he dumb down his in-ring work as a heel? I mean, I think, to be honest with you, I think even elements like that are important. You know what I mean? For heels to,
yeah.
You know, you don't have to be so acrobatic as a heel because people will cheer the spots and things like that. If you want, and again, you know, if this is wrestling, this is the totality of professional wrestling. You know, if you want to, if you're a heel, be a heel. I mean, that's my thing, mm-hmm. You know, and when it comes to mannerisms, when it comes to music, when it comes to wardrobe, when it comes to in-ring moves, you know what I mean? Just,
yeah.
You can be a heel. And here's the thing with, we go back to Flair. Flair was very good in the ring. However, at the same time, there was a, there was just a heelish demeanor. You know what I mean? That he had when he was a heel, when he was in the ring, you know, when he would flop around, you know, when he would get whipped to the corner and flop, you know, and flip around the ropes, and you know, just the knee drop was very cocky looking, you know what I mean? And just the old man flop, you know what I mean? And just you know, but he's on his knees with his hands in front of him, you know what I mean? Just heelish moves like that. It just seems like it's a lost art because I mean it's. You know, both face and heel is artistic, but there's an art to being a heel.
Oh yeah, there is. Absolutely. I wonder if the disconnect between like Owens and Piper and getting cheered and not had something to do with knowing so much about Kevin Owens, the person outside the ring.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's hilarious in his tweets.
Yeah.
Does that? I'm wondering if that kind of ruins the whole, like, how are you going to boo this guy when you're
right.
Just, you know, 5 minutes before the show started, you were laughing at what he wrote on Twitter.
Yeah, he's a great family man,
yeah.
Too.
Yeah, like, as a yeah. father, I you know, I see how he talks about his son online,
mm-hmm.
and that makes me respect him more,
yep.
Which is
yeah,
probably the
cool.
opposite of what he wants to do as a heel.
Exactly. and he, now he's trying to yell at 8-year-old kids, you know, to try to compensate for the people who love him. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like, it's just a very weird conundrum. It really is. Just modern day wrestling with all the social media and Twitter, like there's no, I mean that fourth wall is shattered. You know what I mean? Because
yeah.
Back in kayfabe days, you knew nothing about the person other than what the presentation was on television without the
yeah.
social media. Now there's Facebook,
absolutely.
Now there's Twitter, now there's Instagram, you know, and you know that, it just seems like the person on social media is the real person, and you judge the person on the WWE based on the social media person. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
and
that's a great point.
It should be a very big divide, but nowadays it isn't, unfortunately. Let's talk about this UK championship debuting early 2017. I talked about it with Al Snow, and
yes.
I don't know. I'm cautiously optimistic. I'll say that
mm-hmm.
because we saw with the European Championship. I liked it when Bulldog was involved with it because you know he's European. But you know the Michaels winning it and just as it went down the line with Triple H and D'Lo and you know
mm-hmm.
Just all the other names involved. Regal, I liked, you know, but there was so much more American involvement in the European Championship that it lost the credibility of being a European Championship. It was hardly
yeah.
ever it was hardly ever defended in Europe, you know, to be a European
yeah.
Championship. The good thing about this is that it is, you know, UK talent. It is a network brand that the
mm-hmm.
that's what the goal is. So it seems like it's a different direction, which is good.
Yeah, I agree with you. I agree with what Al Snow said. I'm excited about this United Kingdom Championship, and I'm excited and, like you said, hopefully optimistic about the idea of localized content. It kind of reminds me of, like, the old school days of wrestling in the territories, except this is like a new age version of that. And now with the network, somebody in California can watch local British wrestling and really get into those performers. And it opens up the opportunity, I think, for the WWE to create more characters and talent who they can then bring over to Raw or SmackDown and have these skilled, talent with a built-in fan base. And I think money-wise, it makes sense for the WWE to sell local merchandise for local wrestlers. If it goes well, we could see a lot more local content, different champions on different continents. And then going a step further, maybe then we could see the world and the Universal Champions actually defending the titles across the world.
Yeah,
I think
true.
The opportunities are endless. And on a side note, I think the belt is really cool.
Yeah. People were criticizing it, but I mean, it makes sense. It has that UK royalty feel to it, so I have no qualms about that.
Yeah.
As you were talking, I did envision something very positive. I thought about just, all of the UK talent, defend in the UK for the UK championship, but, the major UK title feud, they come to the WrestleManias. They come to the SummerSlams. You know what I mean? So it has that appeal, that crossover appeal to the States. They're spending so much time in the UK, but they come to the States for that big, that big pay-per-view like a Mania or a SummerSlam.
Mm-hmm. That's a good point.
Yeah.
I think it's going to be very positive. I really do.
Yeah. Let's hope. I hope so. I think that there's so much good UK talent out there to make it successful, especially with all the promotions that Triple H is working with, that I'm familiar with some of them as well. So I know that there's some really good talent there that I'm happy that they're getting some exposure. All right. What are your thoughts on Roadblock?
Roadblock. Well, I'm going to start. Let me just start saying I've never been a fan of like the monthly pay-per-view schedule. I'm a little old school, and I like more time to build storylines, and I think less events make them more special. But that said, I really enjoyed Roadblock. Starting with the pre-show, I really enjoyed watching Big Cass, Enzo, Rusev, and Lana. The match itself was kind of a throwaway. That's okay, but we got to see how great Cass and Enzo are, and they reminded me a lot of DX. Obviously not DX, the New Age Outlaws. Like, Enzo is Road Dogg, he's magic on the mic, and Cass is Billy Gunn. He's the stronger wrestler of the two. I'd love to see Rusev get a partner so that we could have some tag team matches. Maybe Rusev and Samoa Joe. I'm sorry, say again?
I said from Raw, seems like it.
Yeah, I'm hoping so. Some other highlights for me for Roadblock. I loved Charlotte and Sasha Banks' Iron Man match. I was a little leery at first when it was announced because I felt like they've had these two women. They've just thrown a bunch of gimmick matches at them just so the WWE could say they had done it. Because the WWE is big on making history now. Everything is the best now. But the match outperformed all the other ones they've had, and they did a great job of storytelling and keeping the crowd invested. And 30 minutes is a long match for anybody. Great to see Sheamus.
35, technically.
Yeah, 35. Yeah, you're right, because the overtime. Sheamus and Cesaro, I had a feeling they were going to beat the New Day. With the record breaking, I knew New Day was going to beat Demolition's record, but after that, there wasn't really anything for them to do. New Day needed a major change, because change is important in the WWE, keeping yourself fresh. I'd love to see a disgruntled, like, broken New Day turn heel. And Sheamus and Cesaro, great together. They got this, like, borderline implosion persona that just makes them unpredictable anytime they're in the ring.
Reminds me of Luger and Sting back in the day when they were tag champs.
Yeah.
And Luger was the heel and Sting was the face, yeah.
Yeah, and it was just an explosive personality. It was nice. I enjoyed seeing Neville back with a new attitude. I think it's what he needs to get over. because he's talented, but he's just getting lost either because of his personality or his size. But I think he's going to shine in the cruiserweight division. And I'm happy Owens retained. His heel persona is fun to watch. And I really think, Jericho did the code breaker. We had a DQ. He saved the title. They're back together as friends. But I think it's just setting it up for a big explosion. And I think they're eventually going to fight at WrestleMania for the Universal title, Jericho and Owens.
You know, that, I was actually talking to somebody about that yesterday. It's very interesting that you said that, because I said, I see Jericho Owens at WrestleMania. And, I'm fine with it. But Roblox, I wasn't a big fan of. Sheamus, so, I'm liking the Cesaro Sheamus team. I like the dichotomy of it now. And they're really good. Both of them are two of the most solid, wrestlers on the entire roster. I'm guessing this is leading to Anderson and Gallows, but Anderson and Gallows is, they're such damaged goods right now that it's, I don't know how they could be salvaged. I really don't. Yeah. It's so sad because they were so dominant in Japan as the Bullet Club and as Guns and Gallows. It's really sad. So I don't know. Enzo and Big Cass can do anything, any day of the week, and I'm a fan of. I like this feud with Rusev. I think it's actually bringing the outside the ring element back to wrestling, which I always talk about. But like you said, it was a throwaway match. Zayn and Braun was so just irrelevant to me. especially what happened on Raw. There was nothing that came from that. So that was ridiculous. Rollins defeating Jericho, he does just about every week now. So I don't even know why that match was just there. I was skeptical of the match from day one. Like, he beats him on Raw every week. So why are they fighting on the pay-per-view? Honestly, the Swan, I like the Neville turn. The Raw Women's Championship was decent, but I just don't like the hot potato-ness of the Women's Championship. I can't stand that. And Owens retaining was good, but we're going to talk about the Raw review here in a minute. We've got about 7 minutes or so to talk about those two, but it's just you have Owens retain, and you kind of tease a Shield, darker side, just to have that tag team match on Raw and to announce, and we might as well just, carry over to Raw here, and just to announce that Roman Reigns is going to defend against Kevin Owens. Oh my gosh, that just, I was just so disappointed at that announcement. And I'm a huge Roman Reigns fan, but I do not want to see Roman Reigns and Kevin Owens. This is the only way that I can see this happening. Like, with Strowman coming out, I was there, actually. I live in Columbus. I was there. And Roman Reigns, I was surprised that he actually had a pretty decent Columbus ovation. It was probably about 80% in his favor. I was actually pleasantly surprised about that. Columbus isn't a smarky crowd, but it can be at times, but typically it's not. So I guess they like Roman Reigns. I was happy about that because I like Roman Reigns. I just wasn't a big fan of that match to me. I like it, but it just doesn't scream really box office to me. And I actually wished that Roman Reigns would rise the prestige and keep this U.S. title thing going and make it as good, or as make it on a level of the Universal Championship like John Cena did. And so I was hoping that he would carry that into WrestleMania. But it just, with the whole Braun Strowman thing or Raw, it seems like they're going to hurry up and drop the title from Reigns. So with Reigns, how do you how do you incorporate that? Like, how if Reigns drops the title to Braun right quick and then beats Kevin Owens, or, you know, Jericho causes Kevin Owens, or somehow he gets down from the cage. How are you mapping that in your head as far as how Jericho and Owens will end up at Mania?
I think that there's going to be some kind of continuing, like, personality conflict where it's going to go back to Owens thinking he doesn't need Jericho. Jericho's been there to save him every single time, and I think that's going to rear its head again. I could see, like you said, I wasn't very excited to hear a rematch between Owens and Reigns, but I think somehow Jericho will get out of the cage and he's going to save the match again for Owens. And he's, in my mind, I see this playing out as he's going to say, oh, I defeated Roman Reigns, I don't need you. And it's going to escalate. I think they're going to stretch this out until WrestleMania. They got a lot of time. There's a lot of backstory and a lot of investment in this. And I see it playing out until WrestleMania. Probably a blow up sometimes around Fastlane, I think, is in February.
Yep.
And then yep. heading on to there. I don't see Owens dropping the title to Jericho. I think he's going to lose it to either Rollins or maybe even a returning Finn Balor. I'm not sure when Balor's coming back. But I think once he gets past Jericho, we're going to see either an Owens-Rollins feud or an Owens-Balor feud.
Very interesting. So, yeah, Kevin Owens with the Universal Championship going to Mania, that still doesn't really scream appeal to me. It really doesn't, to be honest with you. However, the good part of that is, the good part of that is our Flavor of the Week, and we'll talk about there in a minute. So give me your quick take on SmackDown before we talk about our thoughts of fantasy booking the WWE Championship on SmackDown to WrestleMania 33.
All right, real fast with SmackDown. Overall, I'm satisfied with the show. I've been really happy with the overall quality of SmackDown since the brand split, because last time they did a brand split, I think SmackDown suffered really badly, and this time the blue brand's doing really well. I think that James Ellsworth has really worn out his welcome. Yep. He had the whole underdog thing going for him, and I was interested to see what was going to happen. But where the WWE failed with him is they've never actually let him wrestle. He just goes in the ring, and he gets beat up. He tries to do his one move, his version of the Sweet Chin Music. And, you know, Ambrose betrayal aside, if they had let him show off more what he can do and have some kind of offense in the ring, I think people would have stayed behind him. And it says a lot when the SmackDown crowd is cheering AJ Styles as he's beating up James Ellsworth.
Yeah, one more time. You know? One more time.
Yeah, I think that, unfortunately, has played itself out, and I'm not sure where they're going to go with Ellsworth. Maybe take him off TV for a little bit because they signed him to a contract, so we'll see what happens. I think The Miz continues to impress as Intercontinental Champion. He plays the role of heel pretty well, and he's kind of like Kevin Owens. I think he comes across as a beatable champion, but he can really hold his own in the ring, and it makes his matches really fun.
Yeah.
And I'm happy to see they're going to see Ziggler and Baron Corbin facing off against Styles for the title. I think it's, you know, Ziggler's a great worker. Corbin's got a great future ahead of him, and it should be an interesting match.
Yeah, and that's what I'm happy about. I was very – and this, by the way, this best describes James Ellsworth's career.
I'll lay away and classify myself as obsolete.
Obsolete. That's his WWE career right now. Right. For the second time, I'll agree with you. I agree with you pretty much everything you said. As far as SmackDown is concerned, I've been very critical of SmackDown with the whole Ellsworth at the, you know, on the top. I just can't stand that. And it's Ambrose and Styles keep feuding. I wasn't a fan of that too. But, you know, Ziggler's such a filler. But that really doesn't mean anything. But I do like Baron Corbin finally having an opportunity to shine. I also like the fact that they're implementing something with Apollo Crews. So I think, you know, finally 5 months later, they're doing something with their, you know, with their acquisitions. And so I'm a big fan of that. So perfect time. We've got about a few minutes left. Let's get into the flavor of the week.
It is now time for the flavor of the week.
All right, real quick, Travis, what you got? Fantasy booking the WWE Championship until WrestleMania 33.
All right, well, here's what I see happening. AJ Styles, he's not going to lose the title to either Ziggler or Corbin, although we're going to see some great matches out of them. With the WWE's focus on breaking all records, I see John Cena coming back at the Rumble. I see him tying Austin's record of 3 Rumble wins. And by hook or by crook, AJ keeps the title until WrestleMania, where he's going to face John Cena. And despite Cena saying publicly he doesn't want to tie or break Ric Flair's record, he will. I see Cena taking the title off AJ at WrestleMania.
Nice. All right. Well, kudos to my boy, Ryan Fuqua, Crave Wrestling staff member, to pose this question, which he actually did the Universal Championship, and he was like, why don't you do the WWE Championship? I was like, you know, I'll write an article about that. I'll talk about it on the show. So I think it's a great topic. And when I thought about it, I thought 3 names. And this is my direction on it. I think you start off with AJ Styles. I agree. He's not going to lose the championship this year. He's going to defeat Dolph Ziggler and Baron Corbin. Then you have John Cena coming back next week. John Cena is going to announce that he is going to be in the Royal Rumble. So basically what happens is that next week the wild card finale or whatever they said they coined it. It's going to be since SmackDown has no pay-per-view this month, and you know their pay-per-view went from you know early September early this month to all the way to Rumble, you know. So that's a big difference. So I think they'll stack it up next week, and we'll probably even see a Taker appearance either this week or the beginning of the first SmackDown of 2017 to challenge AJ Styles at Royal Rumble for the World Heavyweight Championship. Styles accepts. Taker beats AJ Styles at the Rumble. John Cena comes as a runner-up to whoever wins the Royal Rumble. You know, maybe even Strowman. Maybe Roman Reigns beats Kevin Owens for the Universal Championship, and Strowman wins the Royal Rumble, and you got Roman and Strowman. Roman Strowman. We saw that on Raw. We saw the tease. He came out and beat up Reigns and Rollins. So we may have that. So that leads Strowman winning, beating Cena. Cena goes out. We only got 90 seconds. Cena going out to the next SmackDown, saying that he almost won. He still wants to be 16-time champ. Taker's champ challenges Cena for he issues a challenge for the title. So you have Taker, Cena for the championship. Either you have Taker win and retire the title on the following SmackDown, or you have Cena beating Taker. So that's nice. WrestleMania. So
nice.
Taker's gone. So that's my take on it. Hopefully it's similar. Yeah, thanks, man. Hopefully it's similar to that, because I will be very intrigued.
Yeah.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. Thanks, Travis, man. We definitely hope to have you on the show real soon. You're an amazing co-host, man. I really enjoy you every time.
Thanks so much. I love being here. Can't wait to be back.
My pleasure, man. Ladies and gentlemen, 247 episodes, Pancakes and Power Slams. Thanks to Al Snow. Thanks to Travis Taylor. Merry Christmas to everyone, and we'll see you on the other side next Tuesday. Another guest, another co-host, as we do every year. It'll be the last one of the year, so we're going to have a lot of fun. Ladies and gentlemen, God bless you all. Have a good night. Once again, Merry Christmas. Goodbye.